Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers find that they cannot pass whatever legislation they like. They find themselves bound by what is popular, or at least their sense of it. They can only act within a narrow set of ideas, and that range is called the Overton Window. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at issues around the country and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. One of these issues is school choice. The movement to expand school choice for Michigan's families has made a lot of progress in recent years, especially since the COVID pandemic. A growing number of parents want better schooling options for their kids, and education entrepreneurs across the state are responding by creating innovative learning models that more and more families can access. Bernita Bradley is one of these entrepreneurs, and her work centers on bringing greater educational opportunity to families in Detroit. In 2020, Bernita founded Engage Detroit, a homeschool co-op and advocacy network to help parents overcome barriers to homeschooling their children. As a community leader and influencer, she's helped hundreds of parents in Detroit access better educational options for their children. And today, we'll hear how she's done it. Bernita, welcome.
Hi, Molly. How are you?
I'm great. Always wonderful to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you, too.
So I'd love to start by first hearing about your journey to becoming a homeschooling parent. So you live in Detroit and you chose to homeschool your daughter when she was in high school. Why did you decide to homeschool her when she had been a part of the public school system for so many years?
Yeah, so my biggest thing was that my daughter came to me in fifth grade and asked me to homeschool her. And in the beginning, I was literally like, no, I'm not going to do that. I had seen so many different homeschool lifestyles in my eyes that I was kind of like, that may be different to me. I mean, even far back as when I was a little girl or a teenager, I used to babysit my neighbor's children. And they seemed really isolated. They just seemed really, 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 really disconnected from the rest of the community. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm grown and I know what real homeschooling is, they were immigrants. And so it was likely that they were going to be a little bit disconnected. Like they were the only immigrant family in our whole community for a minute. And had little children. There were no older children on our neighborhood block and all this kind of stuff. So all these misconceptions that people have about homeschooling, I had a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And so when my daughter asked me in fifth grade, I was like, nope, I'm not doing that. We're not going to be enemies. No, I need you to be real well-rounded and blah, blah. But then when the pandemic happened in 2020, my daughter, I ended up finding out that she was homeschooling really herself. Mm-hmm. I thought she had been on class with a teacher for about a month and a half. I would hear her every day, kind of scheduled. Her and her friends get up. They were on class. I would hear them giggling, and I'm thinking they're learning. Mm-hmm. And my daughter's really self-sufficient. So she doesn't really come to me about work, schoolwork and stuff like that, unless I'm like in her business. But during the pandemic, it was just like everybody was kind of tuned out. Mm-hmm. But come to find out, my daughter and a couple of her friends had decided to create a class themselves because none of the teachers were online with them. And they were struggling, but they were getting it done together as students, really homeschooling themselves. Granted, everybody was homeschooling. Everybody was pandemic schooling. But this was different, right? Like a group of teenagers doing it themselves. And come the next year, around the end of the school year, she told me that, yeah, if my next year is like this, I'm going to drop out of school. I got a plan. I'm going to do A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I'm moving to Atlanta. I've already talked to family in Atlanta. Like they said I could come. And I'm sitting up there like, little girl, no, you're not. No, you're not. Like, what are you talking about? And I said, you're not dropping out of school. You're not doing all. It wasn't the fact of me. She said, no, I'm getting a GED. Like I have a whole plan for this. And it wasn't the fact of, I'll put it like this, if she was a student who I saw was like, okay, I can see you go ahead and getting a GED and traveling and doing this kind of stuff, because I'm an open mom for a lot of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But I need you to have a real concrete plan. The thing was, to me, she was dropping out because teachers weren't showing up for her. My daughter loves education. And so that was heart-wrenching to me. And you could see her feeling depleted because they weren't having any support. At this time, I had emailed the school several times, and they made every excuse you could think of why the teachers weren't coming on work. Oh, just tell them submit the work, that everybody's going to get a pass. If they just submit the work, everybody's going to get. No, my daughter loved learning. And so I said, well, you're not dropping out. What else do you want to do? She said, well, I've been asked you to homeschool me. And I said, okay. That, like, it was my forced hand to do something that has now turned into something so powerful and so wonderful. And I really, really, if I could take back 5 of those years back to when she was in 5th grade, I would have homeschooled her if I knew what I knew now about homeschooling.
How old was she when you started?
She was 16 when I started.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's such an amazing story. You think about how motivated she was and how much she loved learning, like you said, and the initiative that she and her friends had to get together. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it came to that, but, you know, she was motivated and, you know, no doubt would go on and do great things, you know, would find a way. And she did, you know, with your support. But think about all the kids who didn't have that, you know, that self-motivation and the impact that those learning conditions must have had on them. So, yeah, so that's an amazing story. So this led you, right, to then come up with this idea for Engage Detroit?
Well, backtrack, we were already helping parents. I was already doing this because this is what I do as Bernita Bradley. Like, parents aren't getting support somewhere. I'm advocating with parents and I'm showing them, here's your rights and know your rights and here's the policies behind it and understand this, right? And this is what protects you to get the education your child needs. Mm-hmm. So we were already kind of doing this, but I'm struggling at home at the same time. I'm like helping other families, but struggling myself. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting coaching for families online to understand what homeschooling looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And when my daughter asked me, I went to one of the coaches, was like, hey, I need to be coached too, because Victoria just told me she wants to homeschool. Mm-hmm. And that journey really opened my eyes to so much that I didn't understand. And it expanded what we started to do as Engage Detroit, because we weren't really called Engage Detroit, we were just a group of families, right? Like meeting
mm-hmm.
up
right.
virtually all the time. And I was like, this is a thing. Like, more and more families, I was getting more and more families tagging. Like, I started homeschooling with Bernita Bradley and you should join this group. And I'm like, hey, we're not a group. We're just helping people, right? But then it became a group. And then we labeled it Engage Detroit, which was a name of a business that I was planning on having before we even started this, before the pandemic. And so, we launched Engage Detroit. We got a little bit of funding to support the micro school, what they call the micro school grant, and started with a pilot of 12 families to see how it go. 3 coaches based on grade level, early childhood to I think 3rd or 4th grade. We had an elementary/middle school coach and then a high school coach, who were coaching the parents, not the students.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not like direct support to those students. It was that actual mindset of how to shift your mind from being a traditional school parent to a homeschool parent, knowing your policies, knowing your rights, knowing how to choose curriculum, understanding like different grade levels, what level math should my child be on at this age, things like that. And then we kind of became like what I would consider to be like a narcotic, group, but NA meetings. Like, we were just coming together like, hey, I'm dealing with a crisis.
Or some sort
of support group. Right. Like, we were just coming together like, I am struggling here or I'm winning here, because a lot of it started turning from the struggle to the win. Mm-hmm. Parents just saying, man, I thought this was going to be scary when I first started. And like, my children were excited, but I'm sitting up here not knowing what to do or how to do it. And this week, I did not have to fuss at my children about doing their work. Like, they were coming to me. I remember posting this beautiful post about a mom named Stacy, who on a Sunday evening was so happy. She called me and sent me photo and sent in our group chat photos of her son sitting with her on a couch on a Sunday evening saying, "Mom, Mom, let me show you what I learned in math. Let me show you how, Mom, what do you think such and such and such and such is plus such and such and such?" And she was the same mom that I had posted about a month and a half before, that she was she locked herself in the bathroom and was sitting on the floor crying because she was trying to get the teachers to engage with her child online. Now, this was when she had her child online during the pandemic for DPS schools. And it was just a struggle. She said the teacher was telling her second grade child to do all these things on the computer that the child, and was literally frustrated with her child, right? And so she said, "I just locked myself in the bathroom because I wanted to say something to the teacher, but I didn't want to say it and be rude in front of my daughter and my sons. So I'm just tired, Bernita. I'm just tired." I told her, "Stacy, get off the floor, wipe your eyes, log off that computer, and start homeschool."
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, she was just really scared. I watched her go from scared, a mom with five children, to sitting up on a Sunday evening, praising her children and excited. Like Bernita, I never thought I could do this. Like, I never thought that this would work out. And she's like, I wish I would have homeschooled before the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so a lot of parents had those type of experiences where they were literally saying, "I really wish I would have done this from the start. I can work and do this. Yeah. Okay. So you mean to tell me I will actually be able to educate my children and learn how to do a second grader and a seventh grader's math, and they're getting it, and they're getting it better than they were when they were in regular school? Like, no way." And so, yeah, so I'm really excited that we started, you know.
Yeah. And you say, and that's a major barrier that I think a lot of parents think exists, is the whole work issue. You know, if they feel like I am working, therefore homeschooling is not an option, or I don't have the skills needed to cover these levels of math. So what do you tell these parents? Like, what is homeschooling to you? What does it look like?
Yeah, so homeschooling to me first looks like getting out of your own head. Kind of what I described a few minutes ago, getting away from the mindset that you have the typical 7:45 to 3 o'clock school day, because that is not what homeschooling looks like for the average family.
Mm-hmm.
Helping families to understand that it is okay if your child is in the second grade and they're bored with second grade math, that now you can push them to third grade, right? You don't have to keep them on this track. But then the reverse, if your child's in third grade and they're only doing like second grade reading, you can lower back and not feel bad, right? Don't force them to be on third grade level. Help them to get what they need to get to the next level. And then they'll advance quicker.
Mm-hmm. Meet them where they are, right?
Right. Meet them where they are, right? And then also let the children lead learning. Mm-hmm. So our coaches literally talk to families about, hey, your child's really inclined to music. If you're noticing this about your child, how do you incorporate music and math and make it a love for math? How do you find the little things in your daily life to incorporate it in learning? Understanding that a classroom should not just be science, math, English, history. It should be exploring life skills, exploring how do you take history out of a book and make it reality for them? Mm-hmm. You know, no matter what history it is they're learning, how do you take them on an exploration? We had one of our coaches who did a Shakespeare class,
mm-hmm.
to help the children understand history more, right? And this Shakespeare class became something that the children were really, every year now, they're like, "Are we doing another Shakespeare class?" And she's like, "No, well, that was for sixth grade level, right? Yeah. You're now in seventh grade." They're like, no, but we want to do a Shakespeare class.
Mm. Wow.
And so it's wonderful to see that happen.
Mm-hmm.
So helping families get out of that mindset that they have to be this traditional educator, or being an educator looks like I have to, if I'm at home, I've got to be sitting at a desk and my child's got to be sitting at a desk and I got to be, you know, ruling them like back and forth. Have you finished your science? Okay, you've got 15 minutes, young man. You know, I mean, we do our moments where we're like, look, you got 5 minutes because you've been lollygagging or something. But that's every now and then. It's more so your children coming to you and you building on what they already know and expanding it to make sure they're getting what may be your state's guidelines for education, mm-hmm. you know. And I touched on it a little bit, but that grade level, staying away from grade level, because mm-hmm. you can sometimes limit your child or you can stagnate their growth. Because you're staying on seventh grade math again, and they may be on college math. Mm-hmm. You know, that may be the way their brain works. So they may be an exceptional writer, and all you are doing is having them write sentences all the time. No, how about in second grade, you get them to write stories, mm-hmm. get them to write a whole poem, something like this that expands their writing and their knowledge of writing.
Mm-hmm. You also at Engage Detroit, you work with community partners, right? And helping to set up families with resources in the community. So what are some examples of some of those partnerships that you
have? Yeah, I love our partnerships. We have had partnerships with everyone from DAPSEP, Detroit Area Pre-College and Engineering Program, the DSO, Detroit Symphony Orchestra, now DAS, Detroit Arts Academy of Science, school in Detroit, where we offer after school programming. And so literally we get online with these partners and the parents are there. I'm there. I'm kind of like a middleman, right? The parents are there. I'm there. And the organization is there. And we talk to them about, hey, here's the way that we would love to partner. Usually a lot of time the organization comes kind of like with some type of mindset on how they want parents to partner, but I challenge them to say, let's design with the parents. And that designing with the parents can look like even Mackinac Center when we hosted the conference, right? Mm-hmm. We planned with those families for 5 months to actually decide what a conference would look like mm-hmm. that we would host, co-host as Engage Detroit and Mackinac Center. And then who would facilitate this process of running the conference. So the parents became the speakers. The parents became the panelists. The parents became the people who did the breakout sessions, right? Like what it looked like for parents now to not just lead learning, but lead the partnerships that are engaging their children in learning. Mm-hmm. And it has been something as extreme to us planning the unconference to as little as something as PBS came in and did a couple of sessions with us, right? And mm-hmm. they fashioned it around what the families needed at our center. And it might be a pop-up that happens every 4 months or every, you know, it might be 3 pop-ups every quarter that we have with them. But to see the partners come back and say, Bernita, I love working with your families. Like, I've never, let me say this to a lot of times families, when they're homeschooled or they're advocating for what their children need, they're kind of labeled as helicopter parents, helicopter moms, sure. right? Like you're just too engaged. We're the educators. We're the professionals. Let us do it. Mm-hmm. No, this is giving a new face to a lot of these partners of what it looked like to be an engaged parent. So their perception of parents is not, oh, you're not a helicopter parent. You are a parent who loves to make sure your child has what they need and other children, right? And you're helping to design this, which is actually helping my job be a little bit easier to connect to families and to understand what communities use. So that's the benefit of a lot of our partnerships. And we've had everything from local partners to state partners to national partners mm-hmm. for Engage Detroit.
And you mentioned the unconference, and for our viewers that don't know what an unconference is, we might want to provide some clarification there. But this was a conference that you hosted with partners like the Mackinac Center, like Parent Advocates for Choice in Education, and so many. It was amazing to see all of the community organizations come out to support this effort. But yeah, tell me about what was this unconference, and what were kind of the main takeaways from the parents that attended?
Yeah, it was a conference about what parents need to know or want. Let me backtrack. It was a conference designed by parents to give parents tools to understand about school choice, what school choices look like, what possibilities are out there, why parents need to understand more about choice, how to practice choice. And then parents and partners walked away with more understanding about why we need to be proponents for choice, and creating better options. Because even though in cities like Detroit, we have a lot of options, tons of schools, right? A lot of them are failing children, and parents are seeing it. But yet parents sometimes feel the obligation to stay in a broken space or a space that's not working good for their child. So the conference helped to enable some of those parents, or activate them, as I say, to be advocates for better options, or leave those spaces and create what you need for your child, whether it be homeschooling, whether it be a micro school, or finding a unique space outside of the city. And a lot of people would think of that as, oh, you're taking children from traditional public. No, children are leaving, period. Parents, the numbers show that families are leaving traditional public school spaces. And so what we're trying to do is be that tool to help them leave and do it in a way that's going to make the children thrive and be successful, and not just leave blindly, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't just walk away and don't know what to do next.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and it makes sense that homeschooling was needed during the pandemic. Obviously, kids weren't getting the support they needed, but it's still, you know, school choice, more options, whether it's homeschooling, whether it's other private school options, micro school options, charter schools. We need as many options as possible, right, to support students who still aren't having their needs met. So, you know, doing so requires a shift of this Overton window, or, you know, this ideas that are popular. So what else needs to happen? You know, what are your goals with your work in order to shift that Overton window to get more, folks understanding just how much school choice is needed in Detroit and Michigan?
What I would love, a couple of things, is that more policymakers, legislators understand that because so many people see homeschooling in cities like Detroit as, oh, that was a pandemic thing. That should be over now. Well, schools are open, right? Like, we even get that from people, from partners sometimes, like, you're homeschooling? No, schools are back open. The pandemic's over. No, this is something that exists and is going to continue to exist. And the more families that find out about it, they're going to practice homeschooling. So what does it look like for our policymakers to understand what parents need and why they need and why they're making those choices? And not make decisions in rooms or in silos about families that they assume should just really return back to school. Because a lot of time, those policymakers who don't know a lot about us, they're judging a situation that they don't know. Another thing is for them to understand that parents are the first educator, no matter what, no matter whether they choose homeschooling or not. So respect the fact that parents do know what's best for their children. A lot of policymakers don't think that. They just assume they can make these decisions and, oh, we'll do this for those people and they'll be better off. And parents are like, nope, that's not what we need at all. You know, we've seen that happen during the pandemic, where a lot of schools were saying, especially in Detroit. Oh, let's feed children. Let's feed children. Let's get them food. Oh my God, we're having a pandemic. Let's feed them. Let's open up the schools and feed children. But there was no education happening. Mm-hmm. And parents were saying, look, I can feed my child. I need you to jump on a class with my child and make sure my child is actually learning. So assuming that you know what parents knew from the school level, right? Understand helping superintendents and things understand this is why families are leaving, because children still aren't learning. Even when they return back to school, children aren't learning. Mm-hmm. And the grade levels are super low. You know, parents don't know how their children are doing until they get a report months and months and months later. Homeschool families are learning to understand how their child is doing right now, this week. They're learning this, right? So what does it look like for you to be more engaged with families and not look at it as a threat, to be engaged with parents, to inform them on how their children are doing so that they can be a partner in the child's education?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are subjects to us.
Yeah. That is so important for schools, no matter the type of school, you know, to be willing and encouraging that partnership with parents, because like you said, I think something we should all be able to agree on is that parents know their kids best. Mm-hmm. And that can only benefit the kids' education if the parents are highly involved. And through Engage Detroit, you've helped parents to be the primary person who is engaged in their learning. And that's a wonderful thing. So Bernita, what advice do you have for parents who are maybe kind of on the fence and thinking about homeschooling, or who are have decided to give it a try? Or maybe they're thinking about starting their own homeschool co-op or microschool. What advice do you have?
I have it on my Facebook post. Leave any school that is not educating your child. I strongly believe in that. I stand beside it. And that's the only way that our children are going to thrive, is if we leave spaces that are doing harm to our children. And it'll raise the bar for those schools to really understand, there's something wrong when I'm constantly, more and more families are leaving. What's the problem? Now, for those families, I would say find co-ops. If there's co-ops that exist in your community, there are. You can find the libraries. Local churches have homeschooling groups. There's unique schools, like the aviation school that we have here in Ann Arbor, right? If homeschooling is not your niche, then there's other spaces. We don't have to stay stuck because we are a state that practices choice. If you are a parent who wants to start a co-op, be brave. Do not be afraid. Like, call me. I was on the phone with a mom from Texas last week. Oh, I think Texas. Wherever she's from. And she wants to start a co-op. Like, she's been seeing what we're doing online. I've helped people from Maryland, like, think through what it looked like to start a co-op. Because it's different in every state, because you have different homeschool policies. But be brave. Be brave. Make that step, because I guarantee you, if you need it, there's 20 other parents out there who need it. If you're struggling with that thing, there's somebody else. So don't feel like you're alone. You'll find your circle. Because here at Engage Detroit, we literally do no recruiting. And we've grown from 12 parents, 12 families, to over 170 families in 5 years. And so, and we don't yearly go out and do a campaign, door knocking campaign. Are you happy with your child's school? We do none of that. We're not pulling children out of schools. When I talk to a parent, I even get them to understand that homeschooling may not be a good fit for you, but let's try. And if it's not a good fit, that's fine. Return back to school, but find a space that your child is going to thrive in. So yeah, just be bold. Be bold, be brave, do what your children need done, because the worst thing that schools keep telling us is give them time. And when you have a child that's growing every year or is stagnant in growth every year, how much time do I have? You know, they've been telling us give them time since my daughter was in fourth or fifth grade. And my daughter's now 21 years old. So if I gave them all that time, my daughter would have been part of their field statistics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's wonderful advice. And to think that you have grown Engage Detroit from just a handful of parents to start with to now you say nearly 200 families and probably 300 or so students.
We actually have on the record, I think it's 411 families.
Wow. That is fantastic. And to be able to do that just from word of mouth, you know, is a real testament of the incredible work that you're doing and how much support that you have been able to provide families. So, so I think that's a good place to end here. So Bernita, thank you so much for being with us and for your amazing work to shift the Overton window on school choice and bring more educational opportunity to families in Detroit. Thank you, Molly.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.